authority. What is authority? I'm looking at Luke 19 and 20 here, where we're going to be in. Particularly, it's the section where the teachers of the law and the elders come up to Jesus in the temple, and we'll back up and look at all this in a little more detail, and they say to him, "Tell us by what authority you're doing these things." So who can tell me, what is authority? I know you all aren't walking dictionaries, but you have some sense of what the word means. You put it in your own words. Authority, in charge, power, control. Anyone else? Authorization. Pardon? I didn't catch that. Permission, right? Permission, did you say another one, Dennis? I didn't catch it. Right. Authority. Is authority a big deal in our society today? Yes, something that gives the right. Have you noticed how big of an issue authority is in Modoc County right now? Yes, from the signs posted all over the county, right? People campaigning to be given what? Authority. Here's why you should put me in charge. To all the discussion in the newspaper about accountability for those who were in and have been in and continue to be in authority. Couldn't help noticing the business about the hospital, the Board of Supervisors declaring that they will give no further loans to the hospital. You stand or fall on your own. And of course you wonder, isn't it a little too late? Too little, too late. Authority, according to one dictionary definition that I read, was the power to do something. The power to do something. We've given the people in government the power to do something, right? And then we get upset with them when they don't do what we wanted them to do with the power to do something. And so we vote them out and vote in other people who do worse, it seems, much of the time. Indeed, authority is a big deal. We want people in our society to have authority and to exercise it well. And we aren't happy when they don't. And we have an oil spill. Right? And everybody in authority who is supposed to be able to do something about that is being grilled for why they didn't do something. So we're getting a little more of a picture. Authority carries with it responsibility. When you have the power to do something, you also then have some responsibility to do something. We've had a mortgage crisis. And we say, well, the people in authority who knew that this would happen didn't protect us. They didn't use their authority well. Well, I suppose. But our own foolish decisions perhaps were just to let them be in authority, thinking that they were protecting us. I mean, at one level, yes. I mean, people at the ground level getting the mortgages, making foolish decisions. But there is also just a whole financial mess that people who were in authority recognized could lead to exactly this kind of thing. And they reneged, really, on the responsibilities that go with that authority. Authority is a big issue in the book of Luke. Jesus spoke as one who had authority. And people were amazed at his teaching because not so much the content of his teaching, but what it was connected with. He would talk to demons and they would leave. And people said, whoa, we've never met anybody who had that kind of authority, that kind of power to do something. When he talked to sickness and illnesses, those left. That's pretty crazy. That's some serious power to do something. He could talk to the wind and the waves. And it obeyed. They obeyed. People were just blown away with the kind of authority that Jesus exhibited. He even gave that authority to the disciples when he sent them out. And they could tell the demons to leave, and the demons would leave. And in the parable of the minas that we looked at just a little while back, he says, congratulations to the servant who was faithful, the servants that were faithful, I'll put you in authority over 10 cities. It's a big issue in the book of Luke. It's a big deal in our minds today. Why do we care so much about authority? People look up to you. Why? I mean, do people always look up to? I mean, what do you mean by look up to? Respect? So that's a qualified statement. Sometimes people look up to the person in authority. Why do we care so much about authority? Because that's how things get done. Anyone else? Pardon? 9 out of 10 people have to be told what to do? All right. Did I hear a snide remark from down here about authority? It's okay. Not here. Indeed. The people in authority, whether they use it well or use it poorly, have an effect on a lot of other people. And so we care about who's in authority and what kind of a person they are, because we expect to be affected by the decisions they make, for good or for ill. Just was at the Northern California constituency, Seventh-day Adventist constituency meeting this last Sunday, where we re-elected the authority figures, right? The people who are in charge, the people who are governing what happens in the church in this conference. We've delegated to them a certain amount of authority, power to get things done. It was very interesting. Three of the people, when they were put up for re-election, the person leading out just said, okay, these people have been nominated for re-election. Here's, you know, take out this ballot and send it down to the end of the row. And so people dutifully took out their ballot, voted yes or no, you know, do we want to re-elect them or not, send it to the end of the row. When the next group came up, somebody got up to the mic and said, you know, I'd like to know who I'm voting for here. Could you introduce these people? I'm new here. I've never been here before. Well, the people, the three who'd been voted on, were up on the platform, and it was the president and secretary and treasurer. But then somebody else said, yeah, and how come we didn't get a chance to have some discussion about whether we wanted to reelect those other people? And the person in charge went, oh, sorry about that. And then Somebody else yelled out, "It's too late." And indeed it was. The vote had been taken, and we went on with the rest of the day. But interesting, people's reaction. We care, at some level, about authority. We want it to be handled well, right? We don't want it to be crammed down our throats. We need those authority figures. Quite the adventure here. We need those authority figures. We need them to be able to get things done. And we fear them. Or fear that they'll not handle things well and that we'll be affected negatively. So wouldn't it be good, I guess I could say, if we had some idea, some ideas, could distill some ideas about how to handle authority well? You know that you're an authority figure? Whether you like it or not? What's one thing that every single one of you is in authority over? Yeah. Pardon? Myself. Everything that's inside my skin, I am an authority over. Some of you think, oh, I'm not in charge of much, I don't have leadership roles, and I'm... But I heard a relative of a person sitting in this room say, well, I'm going to take my kid to the Adventist church because this person that I know is one of the most together people that I know. Wow. Just living their life, having authority over their own body. You are an authority, whether you like it or not. Those of you who have kids, or maybe employees, or work with other people, you probably have responsibilities of some sort. You end up having more authority than that, been asked to have a leadership role in some organization. You've been given more authority than that. It'd be good to know how to use it well. So we're going to take a look today at Jesus and some of his use of authority. By the way, if you're in authority, and you are, one thing you can be sure of is that if you use your authority, somebody's going to be unhappy with you. Is that fair enough? Right? Even if all the only thing you take authority over is what you do with your own physical body, somebody is going to be unhappy with you. As long as you're alive. Some of us will be upset with you after you're dead, too, but... So how to use authority rightly is not so easy, right? You can do everything right as an authority figure, and guess what? People will not be pleased with you. Some of the people hopefully will be. How did Abraham Lincoln say it? You can fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. We could say please instead of that. You know, you can please some of the people all the time, and no matter what you do, they'll be happy. And all the people, you can get happy some of the time, but you're never going to get everybody happy all the time, no matter how right you are. And Jesus' life is certainly an example of that, because he was as right as anybody. In fact, he was righter than anybody, and he was perfect at it. He was all right. Yep, well, I can't claim that, all right? But Jesus was all right. And he had a lot of people that weren't happy with him. So let's start reading in chapter 19, verse 47. You'll recall last time we were all together here with me preaching, we had looked at Jesus in the temple. There in verses 45 and 46, where Jesus entered the temple and kicked out the merchants that were there. The cleansing of the temple, it's usually called. It is written, my house will be a house of prayer, he said. But you have made it a den of robbers, a den of thieves. Then it says in verse 47, every day he was teaching at the temple. But the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the leaders among the people were trying to kill him. Because yet they could not find any way to do it, because all the people hung on his words. One day as he was teaching the people in the temple courts, and preaching the gospel, the chief priests and teachers of the law, together with the elders, came up to him. Tell us by what authority you're doing these things, they said. Who gave you this authority? He replied, I will also ask you a question. Tell me, John's baptism, was it from heaven or from men? They discussed it among themselves and said, if we say from heaven, he'll ask, well, why didn't you believe him? But if we say from men, all the people will stone us because they're convinced that John was a prophet. So they answered him, we don't know where it was from. Is that what they really meant? I mean, is that true? Maybe it was true that they didn't know. But do you understand what I'm asking? The true statement there is, we don't want to answer this question. Ever had people tell you they don't know when that's what they really mean? Ever done that yourself? Yeah? Jesus said, neither will I tell you by what authority I am doing these things. He reads right through their response, and he says, neither will I tell you by what authority I'm doing these things. In other words, I know you're just not answering my question, so I'm just not going to answer yours either. How often after the cleansing of the temple was Jesus in the temple? Back to verse 47. Every day. In this context, what's the significance of that for the Jewish leaders? That Jesus was in the temple every day, imposing on their territory. You could be even more specific, although both of these things are very good answers. He was in their face. He was imposing on their territory. What effect was that having on them? Jesus didn't just cleanse the temple and then leave. He came in and occupied the place for days. For days. They were not happy. They were not happy. When they ask him this question, tell us by what authority you are doing these things. Past, present, future. Present. What things was he doing? The only things that we're told here specifically is that he was preaching the gospel, although we understand that people came in and they were being healed and so on. But the big deal here for them is he had driven out the merchants and the money changers, and he was still keeping them out. So when they say, by what authority are you doing these things, they're talking about, hey, we hired those guys. Who gave you the right to fire them? Or take over our temple. Temple commerce had come to a standstill, and Jesus kept it at a standstill for days. How did those leaders feel about that? How do you know that? Because by the way they acted beforehand, they wanted to kill him. They were murderous about it. If that's an emotional word. Can we take that as an emotional word? That was how they felt about it. Murderous. What prevented them from carrying out their solution to this problem? Fear of the people. Fear of the people. Popular opinion was against it. How does that strike you? How would you like it if you knew the only thing keeping somebody in Modoc County from murdering you was lack of opportunity? Can you go there in your mind? What would that be like if you knew that there was somebody in the neighborhood who had a loaded gun and was going to kill you if they just got the opportunity to do it? Yeah. That would be emotionally rather traumatic for me. Am I doing real well as an authority figure here? Thanks, Sharon. I've watched a little bit of the special about Martin Luther King Jr., and he was well aware before his assassination that there probably were people out there who wanted to kill him and would do so if they had the opportunity. And that is precisely how it happened. Just the night before, he'd been preaching at a church about the civil rights movement, and he, comparing himself to Moses, said, "I can see the promise. We've not gotten to the promised land, but I can see it from here. And I may not get there with you, but God is going to take us across." What other, perhaps more significant reasons might we wish for them to have to refrain from murdering a man? The only thing stopping them was they didn't have the opportunity. People wouldn't like it. What else could we hope for? Absolutely. And I'm asking, what better reason could we hope for? Thank you. Because it's wrong. Wouldn't that be nice if they were restrained by something besides, well, we might get in trouble. This might not turn out real well for us. Popular opinion, the opinion of the people. What about the opinion of God? It reminds me, I've read a section of a sermon that was describing Moses when he went down to Goshen and saw an Egyptian taskmaster abusing a Hebrew slave, and for the first time in his life, he was going to use his authority to do something. And it says he looked this way and that. And then he struck down the Egyptian and hid his body in the sand. Why did he look this way and that? Because he cared about popular opinion. Which way didn't he look? And it turns out his use of his power to get something done didn't turn out so good. Not only that, he didn't look very thoroughly either. Right? Because somebody saw it. The next day when he was back there, I don't know if it was the next day, but the next time he was down there and he tried to break up a dispute between two Hebrews, one of them said, "What are you going to do, kill me like you killed the Egyptian?" And it said he realized that the thing was known. Well, that's entirely possible. But he looked this way and that, and someone was watching, even if it was just the guy he saved. We could stop and have a whole sermon right there. didn't we? You ever find yourself looking this way and that? No human being is watching me. But that's not where we're stopping today. Last time we looked at Jesus clearing the temple of the Jewish leaders' cronies. They were partners in crime, but today we're going to look at their first attempt to clear the temple of Jesus. Because he's occupying the temple now, and they want him out. And we're going to look at how Jesus handles his authority in the process. Jesus confronted them with their shortcomings by throwing out the money changers. So they come back and confront him with his shortcomings. At least they tried. What shortcoming did they bring up? Yeah. You never told us. Who gave you the authority to do this? So why should we let you do this? There's a bit of a problem with that question, though. Did you notice it? Who gave you the authority to do this? What are they really getting at? Do they think he has the authority or not? They realize that he has the authority, even though what their goal is to try to communicate to him, you don't have the authority to do this. Right? I mean, they're questioning his authority. They're trying to say, you can't do that. But the very way they phrase the question, they recognize that he does have the authority to do what he is presently doing. Who gave you this authority? Reminds me of a sermon I heard about recently. Some of you I've talked with this about already joked about it a little bit because it was kind of funny. A preacher was preaching about women's ordination, and he was against it. Now, I don't know, I don't have to be concerned with what your opinion of women's ordination is, but at the beginning of the sermon, he said, "I have my wife's permission to preach this sermon today." Now, some of you are catching the irony right away. I suppose there's two possible ways that that could be interpreted. One is, his wife is so oppressed that she'll tell him yes to anything because he's got authority over her. The other is, he really does need her permission to preach anything, which kind of defeats the whole argument. And so they come with this question. Who gave you the authority to do this? Their point is, we don't think you have the authority, but their question means, you clearly do. Pardon? Like they're trying to bend his authority. They have to acknowledge that he's got it, but they don't have to like it. Yes. Authority doesn't come from titles. It comes from having the ability to do something and doing it. They had all the titles. They had the official on paper, or on parchment authority, right? They were in charge of the temple. But just watching the events, you can see who was really in charge of the temple at that time. It was the person who had the power to do something and used it. And so for you. Today, God has placed a task in front of you. And given you the power to do something with it. You have authority if you do it. You understand? If you shelve the authority, and say, well, it's not my responsibility and nobody asked me to do it, and then you might as well not have the authority. So the first lesson for effective use of authority is act. Do something. When God has placed an opportunity in front of you and given you the power to do something, do something. Why do these leaders bring up the question of authority at all when it only weakens their position? They look kind of foolish bringing it up. So why do they bring it up? They feel threatened? What did you say, Norm? They were hoping for better results than they got. Maybe they hadn't thought through everything that was going to happen with them asking that. Tell me more. When you say they felt threatened, why would bringing up the authority issue help them? All right. They bring it up because they're desperate. And they don't have too many other things they could do. Very interesting. Did you notice what they left out completely from this argument? Well, they do say that to some extent. I mean, they're getting at that issue by saying, who gave you the authority to do this? But there's one very obvious arena that they just don't touch on at all. They don't talk about the issues. And the reason is because they're in the wrong. And so they bring up the authority question because they're desperate. And they've got nothing better to do than to argue about side issues. And this is a side issue. This is not what this is really about. It's like if I happen to commit a crime just outside the city limits of Alturas, and the Alturas Police Department come and arrest me. And I say, you don't have jurisdiction here. Is that the point? Might I work? Might I get off on that? I might. Not here. Well, I suppose that's good to know. You're just full of not heres this morning. Yeah. Absolutely. And there's a lot of interagency working together. And so I'm glad to know, frankly, that, yeah, people aren't getting off on just that sort of a technicality, but you understand what they're getting at. They're saying, wait a minute, who gave you jurisdiction here? They're not addressing the issue. The issue is, we've been exploiting people. They don't argue with Jesus about whether they're in the right or the wrong. They just argue with him about whether he has the right to call them on it. That's all they can do. And that brings us to, I guess we could say, another reason why they bring up authority. And Norm was hinting at this already. It's because they're really hoping to use his words against him. Right now, Jesus is in the driver's seat. He's taking charge. He's setting the agenda. But if they can get him distracted from the issues and start arguing about authority, then who's in charge of the conversation? They are. And when your kids say to you, not fair, do your kids ever say that to you? That's not fair. You don't love me. Is there any truth in it? Some of you are kind of slow responding there. Right. But what are they really getting at? You don't love me. That's manipulation. Do you know any parents who have the dream that someday they'll be able to argue so effectively with a kid that the kid will say, you know, Dad, Up till now, I've disagreed with everything you said. But now that you put it that way, oh, I have no business begging. Anybody here know any parents that have dreamed that that could actually happen in the United States of America? Don't raise. I'm not asking if you've bought into that, just if you know somebody. So why do people argue with parents? Why do parents argue with their kids about those kinds of issues? And that's why the parents argue with the kids. That's why the kids try to get the parents to argue. But you understand, if you start arguing, who's in charge? Kid or parent? Kid. And the chances of you succumbing to it increase the longer you stay involved in the argument. Will they use anything you say against you? And so, the safest way to deal with that is to say nothing, or very, very little. Because the more you say, the more they have to use against you. And you're doing all this thinking and processing and trying to figure out how to convince this kid that you're right and they're wrong. But they're playing a different game. Right? They're not in the business to be convinced. They're in the business to twist the knife and manipulate you and get you to feel so bad that you'll change your mind. And until you realize that that's the game that they're playing, and you continue to feed them words as if there's some hope that more information is going to improve the situation, you're in bad shape. And so we see Jesus handling it this way. Isn't this interesting? He recognizes right off the top, they're not actually looking for information. This is not an invitation to be convinced that he has the authority to do this. So how much information does he give them? None. Thank you. None. Now he does it with an interesting piece of dialogue here. Before I do an explaining to you guys, first you explain something to me. Where did John get his authority to baptize? What options does Jesus entertain? From heaven or from men? And how do they answer? We already touched on this slightly. I don't know. And what they really mean is, I don't want to answer that question. I'm not answering that question. Why don't they want to answer it? Yeah, they thought it through and they realized, oh, if we say from heaven, he'll say, why didn't you believe in him? And by the way, what did John say about Jesus? My whole job is to point to the guy who's coming after me. You should believe in him. So if they were to say, well, yeah, it was from heaven. And Jesus says, why don't you believe in him? Well, we did. What have they just done? Who have they become followers of instantly? Jesus. So option one is, we're followers of Jesus. What's the other option? If we say for men, all the people will stone us because the crowds believe that he's a prophet. Did you catch the significance of that? What's their other option? Suicide. I'm sorry, but don't ever let anybody tell you Jesus is dumb. With one question, he has reduced them to a choice between believing in him and suicide. They threatened him with a question. And he turned the tables right back on them. Amazing. How did he do that? He's a genius. So lesson number two for using authority well. Don't get distracted in the side issues. Remember what lesson number one was? About using authority well? Use it. Do something. You have the power, the ability to make change for the better. Use it. Number two, don't get distracted in the side issues. One final observation. Who is it that they're trying to trick with their words? You want to be more elaborate on that? That's an excellent answer, Betty Lou. She said, Jesus. Who is he? Yeah, they're trying to. But I'm just asking, who is this guy that they're trying to trap in his words? Norm, what were you going to say? Well, it's, yes, he undermined their thing because the people were on his side. Who is this guy that they're trying to trap with words? He's the Son of God. He is God. He is the one who is wiser than Solomon. He's the one who invented the human mouth and language and the brain and everything else. They think they're going to trick him with words? Ridiculous. Who are they trying to say doesn't have authority over them? Wow, the one who gave them all their lives. The judge of all the earth. Whose temple is this? He says, it's my Father's house. And actually here he says, my house will be a house of prayer. Whose worship was the temple built to, what's the word, enable? I mean, the whole architecture, everything about this temple, it was built for the worship of Jesus. How ridiculous for them to suggest that they have more authority here than he does. You know, Jesus could have shredded these guys publicly. He could have just totally laid their lives bare in front of everyone and embarrassed them publicly. Couldn't he? Yeah. He laid it pretty bare, not necessarily specifically to the person's face that was there, but he said, you Pharisees, you... Yeah. He could have, I was thinking, specifically said, and you, on this date and this night, and he could have shredded them. Really, it's rather kind of him to ask them a question that they could just refuse to answer and give them a way out. It's not a fair match. I love the language of Psalm 2, he that dwelleth in heaven shall laugh them to scorn. The Lord will have them in derision. Their attempts to outsmart God are laughable. Jesus not only could, someday he will come in the clouds of glory, and there will be no challenges to his authority. Then. But amazingly, here in a few days, he will submit himself to their authority. You know, through the whole trial thing, he never pulls the, you don't have jurisdiction over me card, even though they didn't. When Pilate brings the issue up, Jesus says, well, you wouldn't have jurisdiction over me if somebody else didn't allow that. Essentially, if God didn't allow you to have this authority over me, you wouldn't have it. But he submits himself to their authority. He's a sentenced by Pilate. Who's a Roman governor to pass judgment on the Son of God? Do you remember why we care so much about authority? Someone refresh my memory. Because the character of the person in authority makes a huge difference affecting our lives. That's why I'm happy to have Jesus in authority over me. Because I can see clearly that he loves me more than his own life. When I'm at my worst, he's finding a way to give me his best. When I'm plotting his murder, he's giving me his perfect life. He used their complete abuse of authority to give them the gift they most needed. So lesson three for using authority well: your motives matter. Who you are in a given situation makes all the difference. Yes, act. Yes, don't get caught in the side issues. And examine your heart. Am I willing to give my life? For the glory of God. But I hate to tell you this, and we said it before, even though your heart may be right, that doesn't mean that everything will just fall into place. That the fact that Jesus' motives were pure, that he was about to give his life for these men who were plotting his death, win them over, certainly not before the fact. How about after the fact? After they could see that he was willing to give his life for them, did it win them over? We don't know completely the answer to that question. When we can look at maybe two or three examples, Judas, it doesn't appear that he ever recovered and received the grace of God. Annas and Caiaphas, two of the high priests, over in Acts 4, we find them still trying to silence the apostles for preaching about Jesus. Doesn't seem like they were getting it. Nicodemus, although Nicodemus probably by this time had separated himself from those who were plotting Jesus' death, but he was involved and implicated. The Roman centurion, he was even more directly involved, although he was the tool of those that were plotting Jesus' death, a little bit removed. In Acts 6, we're told that many of the priests became believers in Jesus. Maybe even some of those who were involved here. We don't know the specifics. It's possible that Jesus won some, but clearly he didn't get them all. Even though he did everything perfectly right. That should give us pause as we seek to use our power for good. Shouldn't it? We learned in the boundaries class that no good deed will go unpunished. Right? That for every good thing that you do to take control of your own body and have healthy boundaries, somebody is going to resist it. Somebody is going to make it hard. But I guess that should give us some hope and courage at the same time. Because you are an authority figure whether you like it or not. And you have to make decisions whether you like it or not. If only over your own body. Are you ducking responsibility because you don't have a title? Lesson number one was act. Use your authority. Are you distracted by resistance? Get the issues clear. And finally, ask yourself, where is my heart? Am I willing to give my life for love? Let us pray.